So I feel that I'm not good enough. I feel that unworthy and frequently try to please others. So guilt and shame. How is it possible to have a constructive sense of self-worth that does not depend on others? How to feel good enough? How to accept oneself? Oh, this was probably written by 90% of the audience. Maybe 99% you wrote one question together. Okay. Yeah, so this is a big problem that most of us have. And so I think one antidote to this is just recognizing the garbage talk that's in our mind. You know, how we talk to ourselves and just say the most horrible, ludicrous things that are totally false. So I think it's very helpful when you are aware of that self-talk, write down what you're saying. I am unworthy. Yeah. I can't do anything right. Nobody loves me. Yeah, whatever it is, write it down. And then look at it and say, is that true? Yeah, I am unworthy. Wait a minute. I got my high school diploma. Maybe I graduated from college. I landed a job. I did all these different things in my life. I've had many friendships. There's different hobbies I've learned, different things I've accomplished. So what is this that I say I'm not worthy? I've done many things that I think are worthy in my own heart. And many other people think that they're worthy too. Not that I'm looking for their confirmation. But, you know, I've done things that I consider valuable. So how can I say I'm not worthy? That's totally not true. You take out the next one. Nobody loves me. Really? Yeah. They may not love us in exactly the way we want to be loved. They may not show us love in the way we want to, the love shown. But is it fair to say nobody loves me? Really? Really? Yeah. If you have a pet, does your cat or dog love you? You bet they love you. Yeah. Family members, even the family members who yell and scream at you, do they love you? Yeah. One of the reasons they yell and scream is because they want to connect. That's their way of saying, I love you. It's a jackal, horrible way of saying, I love you. But they do care. Yeah. What about friends? I have zero friends? Really? In this whole wide world, I have zero friends? Come on. As soon as you talk to somebody, that person becomes your friend, usually. Maybe not a friend, a tight friend. You've only had 30 seconds of conversation. But every time we contact people, you know, people are coming into our lives, we're going into their lives. How can I say nobody cares about me? It's not true. Yeah. I am defective. Defective? Yeah. There was a company, a factory thing. And when I went by on the assembly line, I was stamped defective because all my wires weren't, my wires were crossed. No, that's not what happened. What does defective mean? Well, there's just something wrong with me. Wrong? Like what? I don't know. There's just something wrong with me. Who's creating right and wrong? By whose definition is this right or wrong? And if you don't know what it is that's wrong, how can you discern it as wrong? You know, you talk to that self-critical mind. And when you talk to that self-critical mind and get it to explain itself, either it's dumbfounded because it realizes it doesn't know what to say, or it says something that you can easily refute. Yeah. So I find it very helpful to really look at those thoughts and see how they just plain aren't true. Then second thing, to remember Buddha nature, yeah, that the fundamental nature of our mind is pure, that the defilements have not entered into the nature of the mind. So if that's the case, then I can become a fully awakened Buddha. So if I can become a fully awakened Buddha, how can I say I'm defective, I'm unworthy, I'm not valuable, I can make everything go wrong? Those aren't the qualities of somebody who can become a fully awakened Buddha. Well, I'm so angry. Yeah, but okay, you have a habit with anger. You talk to yourself. But that habit is not who you are. Our bad habits are not who we are. They're just certain thoughts, certain behaviors that we've done many times. They are not who we are. They are not our essence. Yeah. And we really do have the ability to become fully awakened Buddhas. So I think remembering that is also helpful. And then remembering that we have a precious human life, yeah, with the opportunity to practice the Dharma, and that the conditions to have a precious human life are very rare and difficult to come by. So the fact that we have this lifetime with these opportunities means that whoever we were in a previous life did something really good. Yeah? Whoever we were created a whole lot of virtue and had a really good attitude, a lot of kindness, some wisdom, because if that, you know, because otherwise, how would I have created the causes to have this rebirth? Okay. So whoever I was in the past, I have to thank that person. And I'm a continuity now of who that person was then. Okay. And then to learn to accept ourselves, I think what I've learned in that is that it's very closely related to stopping being jealous, stopping my jealousy. Yeah? Because I'm jealous of other people because I want to have those qualities or opportunities or whatever it is. And I think that I don't have them. So I want to have them and I don't want that other person to have them. But if I say, you know, what I am now is good enough. It's not perfect, but it's good enough. There's another thing Lama Yeshe used to say a lot. He had these little phrases that he said, you know. One of them was, good enough, dear. Good enough, dear. Yeah. And so to learn to say to yourself, good enough, dear. I don't have to be perfect. Yeah. Nobody said I had to be a Buddha by now. What I did was good enough. It's what I did. So it's got to be good enough. Yeah. Not perfect. I can improve in the future. So saying good enough, dear, doesn't mean that I just sign off and I don't try and improve. I can try and improve. But what I've done so far is good enough. It's gotten me where I am now, and that's a good stepping stone. And I can rejoice that there's people who are better than me, because then there's people I can learn from. Yeah. And if I were the best one that this world had to offer, frankly, we would be in very bad straits. Okay? Because to tell you the truth, I don't really know how to make everything in this world run. So I'm glad there's people who know more than me. Yeah, I can change a light bulb, but I don't know how electricity works. I can turn the key on a car, but I can't make a car or fix a car. No, I'm really glad there are people who are better than me and know this kind of stuff. Okay. Otherwise, if I'm the best, we're back at cave people's day. Yeah? Okay. Is it possible to have a romantic relationship without attachment? If yes, what would it look like? Let's go on to the next question. Now, everybody, of course, wants me to say yes as an answer to that question. And what would it look like? You remain totally over the moon, in love with each other, romantic with each other, every single moment until you are 105 years old, and then you hold hands and you die together in total love. Okay, the next question. So I can't answer that question for you. Is it possible to have a romantic relationship without attachment? I can answer it for me. And I decided no. Yeah, because I saw what happens to my mind when I get romantically involved with somebody. My expectation factory produces clouds of expectations. Clouds of shoulds, ought tos, supposed tos. You are supposed to be like this. You should be like this. You ought to be like this. Yeah. And I realize my mind goes completely nuts when I'm attached to somebody. Yeah? I have a very difficult time seeing that person realistically. Okay? So I wish you that you can do better than I can with that. Yeah? I think the question maybe is, how do I lessen attachment in a romantic relationship and strengthen the actual love? Maybe that's a better question. Yeah? How do you get rid of attachment? Lam Rim tells us many ways. But one way is to realize that that person is an individual with their own karma, their own way of thinking, and that you cannot control them. And you can't make them be what you want them to be. And you can't ensure that you're always going to be together, because as soon as something comes together, it's ripe to go apart. There's never something that stays together forever. Whatever comes together always separates. So to be aware of that. Yeah. Like this cup is already broken. Yeah. Being broken is in the nature of this cup. It hasn't broken yet, but in a way it's already broken because there's no way it's going to stay in one piece forever. Okay, if I know that and I accept that, much better. If I don't know that and I don't accept it, when it breaks, then I go crazy. Okay, if I expect this cup to always be there with me, wherever I travel, this cup follows me around. And it always has, when I want to drink something hot, it always has a hot drink. When I want to drink something cold, it always has a cold drink. Yeah, that this cup is a wish-fulfilling cup that will fulfill everything I want, even when I don't know I want it. If I have that kind of expectation of this cup, poo. Yeah. That cup's gonna go. Who do you think you are thinking? Or who do you think I am? You expect me to be like that? I didn't sign up for that job description. Yeah. In taking the precept, does that mean never eating meat or fish which has been killed for human consumption? Okay, now I'll tell you the standard party line answer, and then I'll tell you what makes sense to me. The standard party line answer is that if the meat has been killed specifically for you, yeah, or if you killed it yourself, or if you asked someone else to kill it for you, then you should not eat it. Meaning, you don't do those three and then not eat it. It means you don't do those three. You don't kill it yourself, you don't ask somebody else to do it, and you don't suspect that they did it for you. And so they say the rest of it is okay, you can eat. In my mind, I don't think you can totally say that eating meat is 100% karma-free. Because in our economy, it's supply and demand. And if we create the demand, then the supply is going to be there. No, we may not have asked a specific individual to kill that specific animal. But so that's good. At least we didn't do that. But still, I think there's got to be some karma in it. Let me ask you this question. Would you give up your life for somebody else's lunch? Yeah? Would you give up your life for somebody else to have lunch? I don't think so. So then I have to ask myself, why do I expect another being to give up their life for my lunch? So His Holiness Dalai Lama encourages us to be vegetarian. He also says that sometimes, due to some people's metabolism and so on, that isn't always possible. So he says he himself is a part-time vegetarian. But also, I'm sure he does prayers for whatever being he eats so that that being can have a good rebirth, so that And I'm sure His Holiness feels the responsibility to practice well so that in future times when He meets the continuity of that animal, He can help that animal in a Dharma way along the path to awakening. Okay? So I think everybody has to make their own choice. Yeah? If you have health concerns, you decide to eat meat. There's a mantra to say for, you know, blessing the meat, and feel a sense of gratitude to the animal, and really feel that you have some responsibility to practice well so that in future lives you can benefit the incarnation of that animal. Okay? You know how I became a vegetarian? It was before I even became a Buddhist. So I was traveling in Germany. We were going places and camping. And we went and we got some sausage at the grocery store, and we were cooking it over the fire, and then we cut open and blood came out of this sausage. Yeah, they have a sausage in Germany. It's called blood sausage. So blood came out of this sausage. And at that point, it hit me. I'm eating somebody else's body. It had never really hit me before that when I eat meat or chicken or fish, I'm eating someone else's body. And that kind of did it for me. After that, you know, my appetite for eating other people's body went down. Yeah? Of course, when I went to visit my parents, they said, "Hey, what are we going to serve you to eat? You don't eat meat. What do you eat? Salad. There's nothing to cook you." Yes, I eat salad. There's plenty of stuff that I'll eat. Yeah? Then why don't you eat meat? Because I don't want to eat meat. Yeah? I'll cook my own meal if it makes you feel better. Yeah? So it was just another thing my parents had to get used to with their crazy daughter. You know? My poor parents, what they went through. Okay, sometimes anger is an expression of pain that masks an unmet need. You bet it is. Yeah? Why do we get angry? Because we're afraid? We're feeling pain? I mean, actually, why do we feel afraid? Because we're feeling pain, or we anticipate pain. Yeah, so anger is actually very much related to attachment. The more attached we are to something, the more we fear losing it, the angrier we get when we're threatened with losing it. Mm-hmm. Okay, please expand regarding the connection between the difficulty of expressing pain and using anger instead. Why I think it's hard to express pain when it's actually pain that's behind the anger is because our jackal mind says to ourselves, pain means weakness. I don't want to look weak. I am weak, but I don't want to look weak. Okay. But are you really weak when you experience pain? Is that true, saying to yourself, I am weak, but I don't want to look weak? When you have pain, does pain equal weakness? Yeah. Are you bad if you experience pain? Yeah. Well, our society tells us we should always be happy. Okay. Pain comes with having this body. pain comes with having a mind that is afflicted by defilements. Yeah, pain is part of our life. Mental and physical pain are part of our life. It doesn't mean we're weak. It means we're human. Yeah. So, but when we aren't aware that pain is just part of life and that pain does not equal weakness, then we think, I'm weak. I can't admit I'm weak because then other people will either take advantage of me or they won't respect me or they'll think badly of me. So I've got to put on this face of being strong. Whether I am or not, I'm going to lie and pretend to be strong so that they don't think bad things of me. Yeah. So anger, when we're angry, we get a big shot of adrenaline. Yeah. And when that adrenaline's going, boy, we feel strong. Look at those muscles. You know, whether they're physical muscles, look. Yeah. Or they're mental muscles. We feel when we're angry, now I can protect myself. Actually, I think anger is weakness. Because when we're angry, we can't think clearly. We make really bad decisions when we're angry. Think about it. Think about some times when you were really, really angry. Did you make good decisions then? What did you, when you were really angry, what did you say to the people you care about the most? You don't even want to repeat it, do you? Did those people trust you more after you said that? No, they trusted you much less. It takes a lot of time to build trust, very little time to break it. Okay. Anger is weakness. Yeah. So it anger masks as strength, but it's not our friend. It doesn't really help us. I can't remember the situation I was in. It had to do something with one of the inmates that I was with. And, you know, we were having a discussion. I was not threatened at all. Okay, not at all. But I remember saying to that person, some big guy, you know, I said, you know, if somebody like you decided to attack me, I'm done for. Yeah? That just won't do it. Yeah, when your muscles are like this. And I completely admitted my weakness in front of that person. And I felt a sense of strength in being able to say that. It was weird, yeah. But to be able to be honest and to say that clearly without pretending to be something I'm not actually gave me a sense of inner strength. I can't explain it, but it did. Yeah. Not that I want to meet somebody like that in a dark alley, you know? But I might just say something to that person too. Yeah? You really want to pick on somebody like me? No, I don't think I'd say that. That would just make them madder. Okay, so out of time, yeah, time to offer our lunch, and then we will continue this afternoon. Okay, so a couple minutes of digestion, meditation, and then dedication and offering. And then let's dedicate. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore.